Mr. Calvillo, are you on the line?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay, we're just waiting on Max. Should we wait on Max?
I don't think he's going to be about 15.
Okay, all right.
Okay, I'll call the meeting to order then, and as required by state law, this meeting is open to the public. Telephonic communications. College is complying with the suspended proceedings of the Open Meetings Act in accordance with Section 418.016. Texas Government Code. Members of the public are entitled to participate and address the college through remote connection or may attend in person at this time. Don't see anyone. So therefore, we will proceed on to our next agenda item, which we will have our invocation, and Michael has agreed to give us our invocation today.
Dear Heavenly God, we thank you for the dawning day. Thank you for the many lessons we get every day. Thank you for our college, administration, staff, team, anyone that's involved with our college. Continue to give us wisdom and guidance in God's name.
Thank you. All right, recognition of guests. Chief Ferguson's here, I see.
Yes, and Dr. Sarah Bannon.
Good. Nice to have you here with us.
I think the rest of the people in the room, you know.
Okay. Okay, at this time, anyone have any questions or anything of the board? If not, we'll move on to our next agenda item, which is the routine matters. You've all had a chance to review those in the last couple of days. I'll need a motion to approve those.
So moved.
Have a motion to have a second? Have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. I don't see any unfinished business. So our next agenda item is new business, visiting and future direction of district COVID-19 status 13.
All right. As always, you have the latest information about our response and what we're doing. And as you all know, what is in blue is new information, and we're keeping this as a running document. So when this is all over with, we'll have a summary of all the things that happened during our pandemic and our altered operations time frame. I've asked Emma, she's going to go through, we're going to look at a few things here. Happy to report that when you look at what is happening in our service area, you can tell that as far as new COVID cases, we certainly are not seeing the spread that we were seeing a couple of months back, and then even earlier than that in the end of the year and first of the year. So we are seeing some gaps that are closing as far as new confirmations. However, we've had a little bit happening over the last few weeks. And when you go to the next page, as far as active cases, you can also see that as far as active cases in Tom Green, Dawson, Howard, we are hovering at a lower level, which is great news. We're making progress on what is happening relative to new cases. As far as recoveries, then, obviously, you can see when you go to the next page, then, that we are also seeing those recoveries that relate to that change. Okay, Emma, if you will go to page 8. We're continuing to do our district-wide calls. A lot of our calls are telephonic, are Zoom. We're doing all those kinds of things. As I've mentioned before, the legislative outreach continues to be very different, mail, phone, electronic, virtual. And, and of course, it's been very interesting as far as what's been going on with the budgeting process as well. Very different than what we've experienced in the past. But we are making through the session, and I'll give some more information on that later on in the meeting. On the next page, Emma, which would be 9, we also, as far as the CARES Act funding, we're getting that funding comes in different allocations. It has requirements. Each allocation has different requirements, and we're being very careful about how we award that or use that money. The institution funds, we had to get those given out by the middle of May. So one of the things that we've gone ahead and done, we've used our institutional funds for the reasons that we can, and then we've also given it out to students as well. That's been one of the things that they have highly encouraged, and we have expended additional funds in the amount of $258,000 were awarded to 88 students for $1,500 for a total of $132,000. And there are 336 students with zero expected family contribution, that's a Pell Grant term, who will also be awarded an additional $375,000 for a total of $126,000 in student aid to be awarded by April 30. And then, again, you know that we have many of the expenditures that we've had thus far this year have related to those institution funds, and so we have expended that. Student funds, all funds that were available for CARES through the CARES Act for students have been awarded as of March 25th. We now are working with additional funds, and as you all know, during the audit process, we were being very, very careful, and our auditors were really guiding us, and they were, and that was one of the reasons that our audit was later as far as completion, because they were working on making sure they were following the guidelines that were coming out, and some of those guidelines were not really final. Overview was really not released until January, so our auditors were being very careful to analyze all that. And as you know, at last month's meeting, we had no findings, and our overall audit went great, again, thanks to Brenda and team. But that included what had happened with the CARES funds and that we had used those appropriately. After the audit, we have continued to work with our auditors, and they are guiding us, which is very great that we have auditors that will give us that kind of guidance. And they kind of play the devil's advocate, so to speak, when we ask them questions to see if we're looking at a certain expenditure. Would you agree? And so they give us food to think about. Ideas to think about that help us make good decisions. So some of that is going on, and today we're going to have a recommendation on some laptops, and that relates to basically going through the process and making sure that that would be an appropriate expenditure. So we will continue doing that. And we're also looking at Brenda and Margaret are looking at lost revenue to see, because that is something too that isn't allowable. But the formulas for that are very difficult, and you have to be very structured in how you do that. And so they are taking their time and going through and trying to determine that. On page 16. We continue to confer with our ISDs on changes in academic calendar. On page 20, this is where Dr. Sarah Vannon and Chief Ferguson will begin to bring them into this conversation. But as far as what we're doing for planning of graduation ceremonies and pinning ceremonies and all of that, you know that we've been working on that for months. And I'll just make the point again. Everyone knows that when the pandemic started, the Coliseum is the largest facility in Howard County for massing. And so we have been very careful to make sure that we are following the guidance of our local health authorities relative to that, and frankly have not used, as you know, we haven't really used the Coliseum that much since last March. We started we did have some pinning ceremonies in the East Room over the summer. Again, very careful about what we were doing, limited numbers, and then we did have basketball start. And as you know, we did not have fans in the beginning, but then we opened up a little bit as we were feeling as if we could handle it in a proper way. And I want to give credit to these two guys. They have been helping us all along look at and giving us guidance as far as what we should do. So graduation, probably 6 weeks ago, we got to the point that we needed to make a decision on how we were going to do our graduations, what we were going to do about pinning ceremonies. And so we have a mixed bag throughout the college district because we already have various situations with graduations anyway, as you know. And, of course, the Coliseum here in Howard County is obviously where we've had the Big Spring and Lamesa graduations, except for last year when we had the drive-through. But our SWIT graduation is generally over in the Activity Center on the SWIT campus. And then graduation in San Angelo has generally been at the Coliseum in San Angelo. So we started with our planning for the Dorothy Garrett Coliseum because we knew that we had to make some decisions first on place and if we were going to have an in-person and are we going to have guests and all those kinds of things. And so these gentlemen were great to come and talk with us and help us look at the Coliseum. And it's kind of driving then what we're doing at the Dorothy Garrett is driving our decisions as far as what we're doing on the SWIT campus, which we're going to be doing a little different on the SWIT campus. It won't be in the Activity Center. It'll be in the Maddox Center. And again, I'll talk about that in a minute. And then our in San Angelo will be in that Coliseum. Now, Cindy and group, they have been working on, for several months, really, they've been working on some software, trying to help us have different opportunities depending on what we did. If we ended up doing online, if we ended up a drive-through, if we ended up an in-person, whatever, so that we would have different options. And so we have purchased that and have that in implementation. And we are also, as a part of that, everything we're doing is going to have a streaming part. And that will allow students and guests and employees that are not comfortable with attending, they will be able to participate through a streamed option. At the same time, in some instances, we're going to be limiting and they won't have a choice because we can only have so many numbers in a space. So we are working to get that in place. And so for I'm going to deal with the Coliseums first. As I said, they're going to be in person. They're going to be live streamed. And students are going to be allowed 4 tickets each. Then what will happen, unused tickets will be redistributed as requested. And the software that we purchased is going to help us with that process. And so we're getting that in place. As a part of it, too, it's a celebration experience that is a part of the software, and it will be, again, the virtual celebration opportunities for students. All right, so protocols. How will we handle it in the Coliseum? And again, I ask our guys to be here to kind of help us as we're working through this. We all know. So, okay. Individuals must wear masks. So we are going to, because of the there's a difference, and at some point you guys are going to need to speak up, but there's a difference between indoor and outdoor. And because we're indoor, then there is more mitigation that we have to consider. And so we are, as far as masks will be part of, come in and you're wearing masks, and when you're seated, you're wearing masks. And of course, as every day we say, if you are experiencing any COVID-19 symptoms, don't come to work, to school, to any kind of activity, any kind of an event. Everyone must self-temperature screen prior to entry. And again, that's best practice. Everybody's supposed to be doing that anyway. And we will have our temperature screening kiosk that are going to be in the lobby in the concourse. Family groups will sit together, and we will have it in such a way that we will be, as we already have it, we will have rows that will be marked off that people cannot use so that we can create the social distancing in the space. And by the time we do that, by the time we mark off those rows, then what that does, it limits the number of people then that are in the Coliseum simply through the fact that we are marking off rows. And then when you get the social distancing in, then that is going, that creates more of that. As far as social distancing, we're still going to encourage that. As far as 6 feet in the lobby concourse, we're going to, as far as the way the graduates come in, the way we have our faculty and staff, everybody seated, we're going to have less people on the stage. I know that I've already mentioned to the trustees, we're not going to have everyone on the stage. As we have in the past, we will have an area for the board members to be seated, but on the floor, but as far as on the stage, we're going to limit the number of people on the stage. We also, and this is something that Terry Hansen and Fabian and John, and I don't know who all were involved in it, but we've also looked at, and this is after the guidance of Dr. Sarah Vannon and Chief Ferguson, we have also looked at the air exchange in the building, and with the air dampers open to maximum allowable on the 7 Coliseum air handlers, we can achieve between 7 and 9 complete air exchanges per hour. So about every 7 or 8 minutes, we'll be exchanging air, and that's important when you have people in a large facility like that. So we're doing that. And we're hoping that it's going to be a pleasant day outside, because if it's not, it will get really hot. But we're working on that. Security, we have that in place. And that basically, as far as the Coliseum, am I leaving anything out, anybody? Can y'all think, am I leaving anything out?
In our community now, we have mostly controlled the spread of the disease process, but it's not fully absent. There are states that are still struggling with the disease process. In our community locally, we've got about 20% of the eligible population vaccinated, but we still have a long way to go before we can actually claim early. 70-80% is we can really start to claim that. So there's still vulnerable individuals in our community that are unvaccinated, that will come to these events. So we need to really maintain as best as we can. Like Dr. Sparks was mentioning, it's a risk mitigation strategy overall. So if we were outdoors and we were able to distance, nobody would be aware of that. Because you have physical distance and you have the outdoors. But if you're indoors, it increases the risk a little bit. So then you add on something to mitigate that part of the risk. If there's a very large crowd, that increases the risk a little bit. So you add on something to mitigate that risk. But air exchanges, that's very good. You know, an operating room in the hospital does 6 per hour.
Okay.
So if it goes through 7 or 8 per hour, that's great. As long as we can add a good HEPA filtration system in there as well that captures, you know, most of the particles, then we should be good with those air exchanges. But that definitely adds a level of risk mitigation. Also, with the blocking off of the road and sitting families together and giving a 6-foot distance, you're going to have already some level of safety built in. People who are spending time with each other in a household, it's okay for them to feel good again. But once they're not, they're outside, you space them out. And we'd be at about 25% capacity or so within the Coliseum with that kind of strategy. So that's what really we're looking for. I think with all of those measures in place, as long as the people that you're allowing to use the Coliseum understand and abide by those things. For example, if you have 4 SAMs coming in to do their graduation here, well, it's not our college's graduation, it's a 4 SAMs graduation. So who can make sure that they follow through with the guidelines that we have set in place? That's the kind of stuff to think about. Of course, when, you know, Howard College does this, you're going to have staff there and you're going to make sure. But when you have external people, they should be a little bit more careful with that. So that's all I would ask. Great job so far.
Thank you. Well, thank you. And that y'all are giving us the guidance. And Chief Ferguson and I, again, we've talked about the Coliseum for months. And it's, again, the Coliseum is the largest facility in Howard County as far as where massing, indoor massing can happen. And so that's been one of the concerns from the very beginning, is that we needed to be really careful with the Coliseum. And as we were talking about the other day, we're thinking, unless we're just not thinking right, we think that this is going to be the largest indoor massing since the pandemic started in Howard County. So we are being very careful. And that's why, you know, we know that in our community and everyone is ready for this to be done, but the reality is we've still got to be conscious of the fact that we do have activity in of the cases in our county, and we have a low vaccination rate, and so we're just trying to make sure that we're addressing all those things. Chief Ferguson, is there anything that you would want to add?
Well, I'll add on what you just said. Since this all started a little over a year ago, these graduations will be the largest gatherings indoor and probably even outdoor for Howard County since we started all this. So we want to be sure that we mitigate the risk as much as possible. And Dr. Sparks and our whole team have done an incredible job the whole year. Just some quick numbers. About 3 weeks ago, our Region J hospitalization rate was like 1.5%, which is pretty low. But we doubled that in the past couple of weeks. So it's gone up. It's like at 2.7%, I believe. Dr. Cervona probably knows a better number. It's like at 2.7% as of today. So it's more doubled in a couple of weeks. That means double the number of people that are in the hospital again. Here in Howard County, about 3 weeks ago, we had 12 confirmed cases. As of today, we have 48. So we are seeing not just an uptick, we're seeing a spike again. And I know in my mind, too, 48 people, okay, not a huge number, but that's where it starts. And we're still doing a lot of testing. We are still doing vaccinations. But, you know, when we have large gatherings, it's really important that we try to mitigate the risk as much as possible. So I appreciate everything that you as a board have done and Dr. Parks and her team have done.
Well, thank y'all. It's your guidance, you know, that's providing this. And Anybody else as far as that's a part of getting this ready would say, okay, so at SWID, then we will be in the Maddox Center, Student Center, and we're limiting that. It's going to be small, and it's basically graduates. We're live streaming. People will be able to see the graduation that way. And again, just, you know, numbers. We're just limiting our numbers. Same thing in San Angelo. The Coliseum is larger in Tom Green, so that'll help. But we also have a bigger graduation, too. We have more students that will be going through the ceremony. And so we are going to basically follow the same protocols there. So that's what we're doing with the graduation ceremonies. Our pinning ceremonies, similar kinds of things. That we're limiting numbers. We are, again, spreading out, just trying to do all the things we need to do, getting people in different parts of the campus in Big Spring, San Angelo. We're going different times of the day, spreading that out so that we don't have it all at once. And we're having the awards convocation this Thursday. We're doing that. Again, same thing, limited numbers, protocols. Basically, students they're being able to be recognized, but we're doing it in a very conservative way for our SWID campus and our Big Spring La Mesa campuses. The awards convocation, we're not having the awards convocation. We're doing things through social media, and we're going to do some of those through the graduation ceremonies as far as some of the recognition. And then I would also kind of go along with this. We, as Dr. Sarah Vannon said, if we have other events and we are working with Forsan ISD, have their graduation there, and so the Coliseum is going to be, we're going to have required protocols for the UC Coliseum to follow the guidance of what we're getting from our local health authorities. That is one of the things that we have been guided to do as a part of the coordinating board. We're supposed to work with our local health authorities on what we're doing, and so that's something we've tried to do all along, and we really appreciate the guidance that we've had. Okay, I'm going to run through this real quick and see if there's anything else. Page 28, that's still more CARES things. All right, getting to page 33, we're using that LifeSafe mobile health screening app for dorm students. That's working as far as any potential infections. Laptops, we'll be talking about that in a minute with an expenditure. Light boards as well. Sorry, I'm on page 36. We continue to await the new administration's pandemic requirements and guidelines. All right, we're responding. That's page 40. Purchasing for altered. That's 41. Working with donors. As far as those are interested in providing support for students, employees struggling, looking at the impact of the pandemic on the budget, because there is one. I'll talk about that later. Page 43, we're updating our plan as state and local guidelines change. As we know, our prison delivery has changed in the pandemic environment. We're working on that. Continuing to work with FCI and GO on that. On page 44, due to the pandemic impact, we've had many employees that have not been able to take their vacation during the year because we've had situations where people had to be quarantined or isolated or whatever. And generally, people would, at the end, after a year's time, they can carry forward for a year, but then after the next year, they lose it if they don't use it. And because of what's happening, we are going down the path of permitting that carryover of 135 hours of vacation time, and then the next year they would lose that. Because again, we've had situations where we have offices that are, they don't have a full crew. People are working and still being great about, we got to keep everything going, and so we don't want to take vacation away for something that happens like that. Page 45, I thought you might be interested in where we are as a college district on vaccinations. When we were visiting about this in March, we were at 28.97% fully vaccinated. And we now are at 61.35% of the employees and staff responding. And we have a pretty good sample of there. That will increase by April 30th to full vaccination to 64.25. And then by the, and we have those that are planning to get vaccinated, those that are still determining they will, you add that, we start getting around 80%, more than that actually. We just, there's some that are just still trying to determine what to do, and in some instances there's, you know, there's a lot of different reasons that people are delaying their taking a vaccination. And we do have 12% that will not take it, and so that kind of just gives you an idea. That's a survey, as you know, that we did last month, and we did it again this month. It wasn't required. We're just trying to get a sense of where we are on vaccinations. We thank Scenic Mountain for, we had an on-campus clinic, and that was very effective for those people who wanted to take advantage of it, and we had some students that participated in that. And if we can get enough interest going again, then I'm sure that they would be willing to work with us to do that. We also had a clinic in San Angelo on the San Angelo campus. It was a Pfizer vaccine clinic, and that was Shannon. And we had 63 individuals participating there. The second shot clinic will be May the 6th. So that's the COVID report. As we've talked about many times, I never knew that it took so much effort to try to be normal. But it takes a lot of effort to try to be normal. And we all, I know throughout the entire community, everybody is trying to do everything they can to be keep things safe and healthy and at the same time get back to some kind of normalcy. So, guys, anything else y'all would want to say? Board members, do you have any questions of these gentlemen while they're here? Because these are the experts.
That day, that Sunday, I went to Walmart and
they were given the Johnson & Johnson. And I guess somebody canceled. So I told my brother John, said, we're here, let's go ahead and get it. It was Sunday. And then Tuesday, that's when they announced the Johnson & Johnson, whatever was going on. And God said, oh man, what's going to happen just now? We just got this Sunday. And I said, don't worry about it. The cases are 1 million or whatever they announced. We'll be okay. But he was kind of worried, and the family members called. Said, did y'all do the Johnson & Johnson? Yeah, we just did it Sunday. I said, oh my God, you'll be careful. I said, hey, you'll be okay. And hey, the chances of getting, you know, getting sick after 3 weeks should be okay. But anyway, as a medical, we waited. And we're not going to do the second shot with a... When my dermatologist said, well, let's go ahead. We're here. And if somebody canceled, let's do the one shot and get it over with and go on. So it's quite interesting Sunday with me and John.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sunday and then Tuesday they...
You got it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep.
How confident are you in that 20% number that's been vaccinated? Anecdotally, around town, it seems that it's a lot higher. It seems that everybody that I know just about has been vaccinated, and I heard a bit of a report that the heavily vaccinated and so forth, and it just seems kind of incredible that it's only 20%.
I mean, it is surprising when you're out there. I was at the health fair on Saturday, and we had our vaccine set up there. We only vaccinated 10 people. The major reason we vaccinated only 10 people is because everybody that came out said they had already gotten it. So you're right, that does raise some questions, but the vaccine monitoring system is centralized. So anybody that gives the vaccine reports it through a single system that the state maintains. And the numbers that we're giving you are from DSHS, the Department of Health in Texas. So those vaccine numbers are correct. It is 20%. For both sets. So if you get Moderna, you have to get two. 1 month apart, you get Pfizer, 2, 3 weeks apart. So the 20% is for those people that have gotten both sets and now are considered fully vaccinated. But there's a higher percent, I think closer to 30, probably for those that have gotten the first dose, waiting to get the second.
So when that happens, Dr. Saravanan, we'll be at 50%.
No,
it'll
be at
30%. At 30%. Oh, okay.
Well, I have a question. I was vaccinated in San Angelo. Am I counted in San Angelo's numbers instead of Big Springs?
So the fact that your home base is in Big Springs, you would fall in the eligible community in Big Springs. So anybody over the age of 16 is eligible to get a vaccine. So you fall in the eligible community within Big Springs. So your name is reported, no matter where you got the vaccine, to the same DSHS system. So you would count towards that.
Great. All right, thank you.
Your home address is Thunder Drive. That's where it is.
Okay.
One more comment that I've gotten questions about that I feel like it's important for us to know and teach people as well. So I've gotten both doses of the vaccine. I still wear a mask. And people ask, oh, why do you wear a mask if you've gotten both doses of vaccine? So it's important for some of us to understand and also be able to tell other people the vaccination creates antibodies in your blood. So if the virus enters your bloodstream, those antibodies are going to kill off the virus. So you personally are not going to get sick. But it does not prevent the virus from getting into your nose or your mouth or your respiratory system. And you can still have it in your lungs, not in your blood, but you can still have it in your lungs, your nose, and your mouth. So you could pass it on to someone else that's not going to be able to protect themselves because they haven't gotten the vaccine or for some reason they can't if it's some medical condition that they have. So for that reason is why we wear a mask, because it's more to protect others that you could be carrying the virus in.
Right. And also, Dr. Saravanan, as we've talked about, if you've had the vaccine and you happen to be one of the few that gets the virus again, then it's supposed to, as far as the severity, it does lower that.
That's exactly right. So when we say 95% efficacy for Moderna and Pfizer, we talk about people not getting sick at all related to that. But the other 5%, they could get sick, but even if they do get sick, the severity of the disease is much lower. Johnson & Johnson gives you that 67% won't get sick at all, but the other 30-something percent, even if they do get sick, it prevents them from getting sick enough to need hospitalization, sick enough to need ICU care. And that's what we're hoping to achieve.
Okay. Any questions for these guys? I get to talk to them every week and hear their guidance, wisdom. We really, really appreciate what you guys are doing and have been doing for months. Sometimes you're not in popular roles when you're saying it's not a good idea to do this and not a good idea to do that. And so we appreciate that you're trying to look out for the best interest of everybody.
Absolutely, Dr. Sparks. The most important thing I try to tell people is we're not finding barriers to doing things. We're finding ways to do things.
Right.
We want to return to normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's nobody in this room that I work to that don't want to get back to normal.
I bet we're all about right there with you. Yeah, we are ready. Okay. All right, so anybody have any questions while these guys are here? Because I told them that they would be able to leave. I doubted they wanted to stay for the entire meeting. Okay, thank you all so much.
We certainly appreciate you coming.
And did we get him? Okay, we're getting you that. Chief Ferguson?
Thank you so much.
Okay. All right, we'll move on to our next item, open house. Howard College update.
Okay, there's nothing with the open Howard College, no change this time.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is visiting future mission value strategic planning.
Okay, so first on the webinar, I don't know if any of you were able to watch that webinar. It was on funding and how we get our money. So it's perfect in this particular time of year. But anyway, it's out there. You can watch it sometime if you want to. I did watch it, and I think you know a lot of the information, but in case you need a booster. As far as then the status of planning, I have asked Brian Stokes. As you all know, Brian has been working on, as our Director of Institutional Effectiveness, he has been working on our effort for several months now. So he's got a PowerPoint prepared. So, Brian, I'll let you go. Take
you
it from here.
Here.
Yeah, sure, whatever. Whatever you're comfortable with.
So, as y'all know, we've been, about since November, been working on evaluating Howard College's vision, mission, values, and strategic planning. This is part of the institutional effectiveness of our institution, a good way for us to go back and reevaluate what our goals are, help us move forward, and always continuously improve on what Howard College does. As y'all know, our vision, our mission, our goals, our values, strategic plan is set by the Board of Trustees. Our job is to hopefully provide you enough feedback on what everybody who is involved with Howard College thinks that we can improve on. Give a good self-assessment about what is occurring. We've been focusing mostly on the vision right now. The vision is the key part that really, when we talk about vision, is we're talking about what is Howard College going to be like or look like within the next 5 years. Once we designate what our vision is, we are going to then align our mission, our values, our goals, and our strategic planning, our measurable objectives, and our key performance indicators to make sure we get to where we want to be in the next 5 years. What we've been working on is to make sure that we have input from as many people as possible. Again, Howard College is composed of many areas, not just faculty and employees, but students play a key part, our community play a key part, our friends in the K-12 education, and then, of course, advisory boards in our foundations and so forth, all have a stake in what Howard College does. What we've been doing is we've released a survey to these people to take an honest look at our vision, our mission, our key objectives, our values, open discussion questions to give us input on what Howard College could be doing within these next 5 years. Our survey has gotten over 467 clicks on it with a lot of results and input from people throughout our Howard College district. Dr. Sparks and I have also attended a lot of open forum discussion areas, whether it be student roundtables with each of our campuses. We've met with our advisory boards. We've met at Rotary meetings. We've discussed this in district campus meetings and also within some of our foundation meetings so far about what are things that Howard College can be doing for the next 5 years. Looking at the results of what we have, there is a lot of results coming through. I want to start off with the mission review. A lot of these questions are on a like our scale, looking for are we doing excellent, to we need improvement, to we are unsure. Looking at the mission and our current mission, there are 17 aspects that were looked at to determine are we doing great, are there room for improvement. Looking at those 17, there were 5 strong performers, and there were 5 areas that needed and that we felt needed improvement based off of the responses we received. Strong performance is we are doing very good on providing quality education for lifelong learning. We are really focused on our academic courses, and we focus on serving our counties and our area. We also make sure we're doing a good job providing services for our students. Areas of opportunity, things that, you know, did not score as well that we should be looking at too is things within the service area, providing professional development, growing our economic development within our service area, and also cultural development, and also supporting students who may not be academically ready to enter into the college. Within the values, Howard College currently has 6 values within our current strategic planning process. So we looked at those areas that we were looking excellent, and also looking at places that needed improvement. These results are looking at that cumulative result of everybody who was surveyed. Strong performance is we were doing very well focusing on who we serve, institutional integrity, and also providing innovative instruction for successful outcomes for our students. Areas that show that needed improvement based off of our survey and areas that we can grow on is, again, providing high economic standards, valuing the individual employee and utilizing processes, policies, and procedures. Other areas that the people were asked were, what are considered priorities for Howard College in the next 5 years? We provided 37 various priorities, again, giving us a range of, is this something that's a high priority to something that is not as much of a high priority? When you look at this one specifically, when you start looking at what students say compared to what faculty and staff to K-12 to the community to advisory boards, everybody has different priorities, which is understandable based off of your role and the way you collaborate or work with Howard College. But key takeaways when you look at all these, when you look at the top 5 of each of these groups, is student success is important. We want students to be successful. All around, each group talked about students being successful in some form, whether it be retention, whether it be graduations, whether it be leading them to a job or helping them get to their next step. Technology and equipment is a big key part priority in the next 5 years. That seemed to be coming into a lot of the groups of being of importance. Ensuring that work groups, this is kind of more towards staff and faculty, are equally valued and unified working as a district. Also, employee salaries and benefits. A key part that came up a lot, and I believe y'all guys even had mentioned within the time that we discussed with y'all guys, the board, about the future of Howard College, is educational programs that fit our service and regional area. The career and technical education, allied health aspect. Those students who may not go to a 4-year school, but focusing on our community economic development. And then also, finally, expanding our fiscal resources for Howard College is a priority. The next, we did also offer open-ended questions. These are some of the questions we had asked the board back before the start of the year about what Howard College could be doing in terms of our vision in the next 75 years. The best way to kind of look at this and look at The response is within a word cloud, reading through these results. Everything revolves around the student. We talk about whether it is the education, whether it be that career and technical education, the allied health, focusing on our workforce, our service area, and our campuses, and growing student success. The top institutional priorities, again, you see students is another key focus. Again, focusing on that student success, focusing on our programs, our community, and our education, focusing on faculty and staff growth and development there as well. The next slide, people were also asked, you know, looking at, you know, should Howard College be focused, be focusing on being a national model for student success and academic excellence in a role setting. When looking at this, 89% of the people who were surveyed think this is at least very important. This, again, looking at what community colleges do and within the state of Texas, you know, this is something that is very achievable for a school like Howard College. When we look at what student success is in schools and how they're looked at this, a lot of times, you know, we look at schools like, that are represented or that are mentioned within the Aspen Institute of Success, and there's many schools, there's schools around us, like Amarillo College or Edsa College, who are doing these kind of things, and this is something that Howard College is capable of as well. Key concepts, if you were to, you know, ask me my opinion, my looking through all these results, because there is a lot of results to go through between the discussions, between the survey results, and I believe y'all guys received the link to the survey results in there. You can actually look at each question breakdown and how everything is broken out by affiliation of a student or K-12 or by campus. Key things coming out of our surveys and our discussions is student success. Student success is key. Everywhere within the survey, you see student success as a priority, whether it be retention, graduation, discussion of developing guided pathways, providing resources for our students to be successful, and minimizing those barriers so students can get their education. Community is a big key factor. Again, a lot of times in what you see is our service area, making sure that at Howard College we are in presence and we are helping, whether it is the economic development, cultural enrichment, making partnerships in our K-12, working within that community and focusing on our community is key. Instruction is another key part. Again, we got high marks in terms of excellent instruction, being innovative, but again, always continuously to improve on that student learning. Workforce kind of fits into that community standpoint. There was a lot of discussion on career and technical, allied health, expanding those areas. What is our area need? Let's help our area grow. Another key part that came out is our SWIT campus. SWIT is a key part of Howard College. You know, we, as we look at the statute for community colleges, Howard College is the only person, the only institution that has a SWIT type component. And that's something that should be highlighted and really move forward in our vision moving forward. Promoting who we are. A lot of times in the open discussion questions, people say, you know, we know Howard College is doing great things. It just doesn't seem you're as visible. That people are not, oh, Howard College can help you, or being more of that top choice within our service area. And then finally, another key concept was our Howard College personnel. Further showing our employees that we value them, help support them, whether it's in their educational growth or help them grow as an employee, and then also engage our faculty and staff and be a district collaboration to focus on our goals of student success and moving forward. So all this to say, kind of where are we at right now? You know, our goal right now is we have got all this information. We're digging through all this information to determine what we want to do and set for our vision, and in return going to help us hopefully set up our goals, our mission, and our strategic plan and our performance indicators moving forward. As I mentioned earlier, the vision, all these aspects are set forth by the Board of Trustees. So our role is, since we are the ones who carry out this vision and want to make sure we be productive and move forward, we want to make sure we give you all the information possible on what that is and to provide you a draft of what we see as a vision for Howard College moving forward. So our goal moving on the next step is to provide a draft of what the visions, what we, the people who will be carrying out the vision, will look like in the next 5 years at the next May board meeting. For y'all guys to review, ask questions, make changes, so forth. But go through all this so y'all guys have as much possible information about what Howard College is setting itself up for the next 5 years. Is there anything I did not include in there?
Okay. Great.
Is there any questions?
So the only thing I guess I would add, Brian, is that this next week you'll start with some focus groups that are going to help start synthesizing all the information and coming up with that vision statement. And so those that are willing to kind of dive in deeper, that's going to be happening in the next week or two. And then we'll start distilling it down to this is the vision.
Yes, that's correct. We're already moving forward with, I have all this information. I've asked for volunteers throughout the district to help create this vision statement. So then again, moving forward, and Howard College, the employees and the staff that really are going to push this vision forward. So I want their input on how we craft this vision. And so we are starting that, and hopefully we'll be doing that at least by Friday or Monday or Tuesday of next week at our meeting and go forward with that.
Thank you, Brian. All right, so Brian, don't go too far away because, Mr. Klein, can I just go jump right to the next? As a part of the planning, we thought that it would be good for you to see what the Trellis report, our latest, as you'll recall, we participated in this, was last year or the year before?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. And so we had a summary, this is a summary of what students said in the fall of 2020. And basically, we did not have a large sample size.
That's correct.
But at the same time, those that participated, we have students that are struggling out there, and we know that. And frankly, that was one of the reasons that it was like, get that CARES money out, you know, and hurry, you know, let's get it out, because we have students that are. And I don't know, Brian, do you want to kind of hit the high points of what we see?
Well, the Trellis survey, just a kind of reminder on it, is that, you know, it does focus on student financial wellness. It's self-reported by students. The student is a population concentrated in our students, you know, that are non-dual credit, 18 years of older. We send this out to them via email to tell them what we can help them assist with. But again, I'm not looking to talk more on those things from there.
Okay. All right. So of the ones that participated, 69% of them worry about having enough money to go to school. 63% they worry about running out of money three or more times in the past year. As far as housing insecurity, we're at like at 41%. That they're struggling to pay their rent, utilities, or they've had to move frequently. 54% indicate that it is important to them to support their family financially. 55% of those responding said that in this year, family finances have worsened. As far as very low food security, and we're good to see, we hate that we have 16%, but that's not as high, so people are getting food, and, you know, that is something that we've really tried to work with as far as our pantries. 16% would show signs of very low food security. 59% are less than confident that they will be able to pay off debt. 76% said that the pandemic has added to their levels of stress, anxiety, and depression. 48% total debt is overwhelming to them. 29% as far as students pay for college with credit cards. And 62% said they would use financial support services if offered by their school. So obviously that was one of the things, again, that CARES money, we're trying to get it out. 66% of students said they would have trouble getting $500 in cash or credit to meet an unexpected need within the next month. So another reason that we have our student success funds, and we've set those up in the different foundations so that when we become aware of a student that is really struggling, we can help them. So that's kind of, again, an overview of, and so this represents, it's not a large sample.
Well, what is the sample? If I remember correctly, it was, I think, about 150 students who replied out of maybe 1,800, so almost 10%.
Yeah.
Can I just comment on this? Some of this is clearly COVID-related.
Sure.
I remember, and it's been a long time, when I went to college, I will tell you that probably 69% of students worried about having enough money to go to school. I mean, a lot, it's a very small sample size.
Right.
It's probably self-select for people who are
sure.
having problems.
Sure.
And a lot of these numbers honestly look to me, and maybe I'm being a horrible person, look to me to be sort of typical
sure.
of this. I mean, 62% would use financial support that was offered well to most
yeah.
people.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I don't think that this is it's too much of an outlier.
62%
of students run out of money 2 times a year. I know when I went to college, all my friends ran out of money.
Sure.
Periodically.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
sure.
it looks to me like a fairly
typical
college sample, particularly at a very low level of self-selection.
Sure, absolutely.
So it's
absolutely.
It reminds us that that we have to be needful, the CARES Act money, the student
right.
success money, that we help where we can.
Exactly.
But honestly, we're probably never going to do much about the 69% of students who worry about
sure.
having enough money.
Sure.
I mean, that's just...
That's college. That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not atypical.
I did. Everybody else did. My friends did. My peer group did.
Sure.
You always worry about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. Yeah. And that's one of the things that we talked about, you know, that it's a small sample, but nevertheless, we have a sample. And so we're going to do everything we can to try to make sure that we have opportunities, you know, to help students when we can. But you're right. It's not atypical. So, okay. Thank you, Brian.
I have a question. On our student success funds that are in the foundation?
Yes.
I know it's there, and I know it's available. Is any of it being
seen? Yes. Okay. And it's just... Basically, when we find out we have an issue,
I know. I think that's what kind of my point is. That
yeah.
I just want to make sure that the funds are available, that they are being accessed, and that people that we are finding out. Because it's one thing to talk about finding out,
right?
It's another thing to actually do it and spend the money.
Exactly.
And I
exactly.
just want to make sure that end of it's open.
Yeah.
So that. If we are finding out and we are spending some money.
Right. Yes, I would say, Julie, you know.
I would say so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the CARES Act money, is the CARES Act money sort of, because there's a considerable amount of that, is that sort of lowering the amount of the student success money that's being accessed right now?
I wouldn't say that.
You mean that the CARES money is supplementing
that? I think what you're asking is that would there still be needs besides, would people still have needs besides what they're getting from the CARES Act money? It's supplementing?
The CARES Act money it sounds to me like the CARES Act money is sort of step one, because you gave out a lot of CARES Act money to
right.
a lot of students.
Right.
And then there was still some other...
That's things. Correct.
But some of that is being soaked up right now with the CARES Act.
Yeah, money. Right now it would be. Absolutely.
Right for the moment. That doesn't mean that 3 years from now it will
exactly.
be.
Exactly.
But
right.
during COVID, that $375 that you
yeah.
gave to... a whole lot of students,
right.
that would mean that that wouldn't necessarily have to come out of student success money.
Absolutely. It's true.
Right this minute.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Brian, thank you. Okay. Next item on the agenda is resolution for transfer of funds to the foundation.
Okay. All right. You have in your package of information, you have a resolution. And what we're talking about here, as you know, over the last, several years now, we've had different individuals that have requested, they've given money to the college as opposed to the foundation, or one of our foundations. And they have expressed an interest in moving their funds from the college to the foundation because we can have a more aggressive investing policy in our foundation than we can through the college. And so those have come in along the way. You've approved them, and so we've had that happening. We have been working with different individuals, and let me remind you, we're 75 years old, and so for the Big Spring campus. And then you begin to get to the other campuses, and we're not too young on our other campuses as well. But for sure, on the Big Spring campus, we have some funds that have been here since the 40s and 50s, donations people have given, and as you recall and know, our foundations are set up so that for the sole purpose of our campuses and by the Articles of Incorporation, the bylaws, they are specifically for the campus that they represent. The Big Spring, the Howard College Foundation takes care of Big Spring, and then there are some La Mesa funds in that, and then we have a SWID Foundation, and then we have our San Angelo Foundation, all separate, everything separated out. We have a few remaining donated funds that right at $972,000 that, again, from the inception of the Big Spring campus, that could be moved to the foundation. And if we move them over there, then again, we can yield higher rates of return. That money is, we invest with Edward D. Jones, and we have a very, very structured approach. We have an investment committee with financial backgrounds as a part of that. And they have to do the same diligence and oversight of the money. It would not change however a person had given money to the college in the beginning and for the purposes that it gave, that they gave the money, it would not change. All that's the same. And so if it's a scholarship and it's an endowed scholarship, and nothing changes. All it would do is it would put the money in the foundation so that we can have a more aggressive investment process. We have visited with the coordinating board to make sure that would not impact our financial standing. We're comfortable with that. Brenda's looked at that and looked at the different ratios, and we feel comfortable with that. I also visited with our attorney to make sure that he had no concerns, and he doesn't. He said this is very common And that's one of the reasons we've been shifting. You know, we've been shifting funds over the last few years that have been for those purposes. They're not tax monies. These are all private, you know, this is private money that has been given, and it's just being able to get a higher return for the student, for the people who have invested in the college. And so the resolution then that we have provided, basically, I'll just read it. Whereas Howard College and the Howard College Foundation have maintained a symbiotic relationship since the foundation was created in 1978, as evidenced by the numerous joint memorandums of understanding between both entities, and whereas the Howard College Foundation was created to raise, invest, and endow funds for educational and cultural projects to align with Howard College's strategic plan, institutional priorities, and project and resource requirements, and whereas the foundation can invest in instruments which yield higher rates of return than the college may legally make, which result in additional scholarship and grant earnings, and whereas the college receives the benefit of all funds raised or generated by the foundation, and whereas Article 10 of the Articles of Incorporation of the Howard College Foundation states that upon the dissolution of the corporation, the board of directors shall, after paying or making provisions for payment of all liabilities of the corporation, transfer all of the assets of the corporation to the said Howard College or any successor to Howard College, which is a publicly supported institution of learning to be used for educational purposes of such college or any of its affiliate organizations, provided that if such college is not there in existence and there is no institution of learning which is the successor to such college, such assets shall be disposed of to such other organizations or organization organized or operated exclusively for educational purposes as shall at that time qualify as exempted organization under Section 501(c)(3) of the Internal Revenue Code of 1954 for the corresponding provision of any future United States Internal Revenue Code as the Board of Directors shall determine, or in the absence of such determination as may be determined by a district court in the county where the principal office of the corporation is then located. And whereas the Howard College Foundation extends the same diligence of oversight as Howard College to safeguard and use donated funds for the purpose as originally intended by the donors, be it therefore resolved by the Howard College Board of Trustees that the District Chief Fiscal Officer Controller is authorized and directed to transfer all endowed and non-endowed funds, including accumulated interest, to the Howard College Foundation, along with each fund's donor stipulated use, and to make any and all necessary entries on the college's books and records to evidence the transfer of said funds, and that the passage of this resolution shall take effect immediately upon its approval. So that's the resolution, and then we have also attached the funds, the different ones, and so you could kind of, you know, you can see, because there's some that we would not transfer for various reasons. But that the ones that are not in some type of color, then we would. So, do you have questions? Anybody?
Being none, I would entertain a motion to approve these. Have a motion to have a second? I have a second. Thank you, Ben. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much.
Motion passed.
Okay. Nothing from LaMisa, San Angelo, or SWID.
No, sir.
So we'll go to performance measures and outcomes, accountability measures.
All right. We're giving y'all a bunch to look at this time. Okay, so we have... Actually, we have a couple of things. 2 years ago, we started doing a review of what, as far as our dual credit program overall, as far as what we're delivering, the cost structure, the overall framework of dual credit, and because we do a lot of dual credit throughout the college district in our service area. And so we wanted to look at that. We wanted to look at the overall cost, and so we've done that. We started 2 years ago. We looked at 18-19 numbers, and then, and frankly, we had intended to come forward with this report to you last spring, but we know what happened. And so we put it on the back burner because we couldn't really, we needed to refocus. And so we have recently have gotten back into it and have spent some more time looking at it. And so now we have recent information as of 2021. And so we've tried to look at literally, we've been looking at every single school in the service area that we serve and looking at just the overall impact of what we're doing with dual credit. So it's been a massive study. There's a lot of background. Emma, let's get to the one that is the example, the HCI, the first one. Oh, good. It's not going to... Okay. All right. Well, you all have it. And so so basically what we've done, we've gone through and we've got a template. It's very complex. And we have looked at all the different, as far as our cost, our faculty cost, operational support cost, contact hours, what we get in the way of revenue relative to contact hours, tuition, and then the direct cost that we have. And so we have analyzed all the different school districts and tried to see impact, what is happening as far as cost and if we made any changes in what we recommend as far as how we pay or we do tuition. And so we spent a lot of time on that. We've also... also looked at how we compare with other community colleges as far as what we charge for dual credit tuition. And so we've spent a lot of time on that. And what we have been considering, and we've talked about currently what we do, we charge, we have reduced tuition for dual credit. That's community colleges across the state, that's what we do. We have reduced tuition. And then what we have done for many years, we have offered academic credit at a reduced rate, and then our the CTE credit, we have charged zero, except that the students, and in some instances, the institution or the school districts pay for the cost of any kind of kits or anything like that that might go along with the CTE course. And so that has been our way of operating with tuition. We've also, if the instructor is provided by the school district, meaning they're a credentialed adjunct for us, then we pay the school district $50 per student for that arrangement. And so as we've been looking at this and analyzing it, we started talking about what could we do to simplify how we approach. We talked about lots of different approaches. One of the things that we have discussed is removing the base off of the tuition so that it's just a straight credit hour, because in district is a $50 base, out of district is a $100 base, and then we have a credit hour that's on top of that. So we've talked about removing the base, keep the cost by credit hour the same, and then discontinue paying the school district for the adjunct instructor, because if we have an adjunct instructor with that school district, then if they're providing the instructor, because they're our adjunct, then no charge, no tuition charge. If we're providing the instructor, then tuition is charged regardless of whether it's an academic or a workforce course. So basically, we teach, there's tuition. They teach, a credentialed instructor that becomes an adjunct for us, we don't charge tuition. And then any associated kits and all that would still be a part of their responsibility. There's different scenarios out there. Some school districts they may pay one course for the student. They may pay all the student's dual credit. They may split it with the student. They may wait till a student makes a certain grade and then they reimburse them. So there's all different kinds of variables out there as far as the way tuition is being handled by students or for students. And so we've taken all of that into consideration. And then at the same time, as we've been looking at dual credit, we have also looked at what we're charging in the way of tuition period for our regular students. Again, this was something that we were working on last year in the spring. And again, because of when the pandemic hit, we pivoted and started putting our focus on other things and determined that we would either come back with a recommendation on a tuition budget increase for either this past January or look at it for fall of 21. So we just determined not to bring it back for your consideration for this spring. We decided to wait a year, try to get through the economy, the pandemic, and we have not increased tuition since 2015. There have been some variations in fees, but as far as tuition, we have not. And so we have also, when we look at tuition, we look at how we compare to colleges in the West Texas area, our peer colleges, small colleges, and we try to get a good idea of how we relate. We've always tried, we've kind of had a practice that we would, I'll use the word, hover around state average, West Texas area. We've just kind of tried to, look at that. A lot of the smaller colleges charge a lot more, but we have tried to stay within the West Texas area in the state average through what we have done. So what we have been discussing is increasing in-district tuition by $5 and out-of-district tuition by $10. So for a student who's taking 15 hours, that would be an increase of $75. Obviously, for a student out of district, then that'd be an increase of $150. And so those are some of the things. Again, we have been looking at. And I didn't want to look at that. Yes. So, currently, for an in-district student, when you look at the tax survey, we are currently at $90. State average is $99, and the West Texas group is $93. And the peer group is 92, and small colleges 104, and so we're proposing $95. So that gets us, you know, we're below state average. And let me also just make this point: other colleges would be talking about tuition increases at two, but this is based on the fall 2020. So we're survey, so we're trying to keep in there. And then out of district would go from 138 to 148. And state average is 153. West Texas group is 148. Peer group 134. Small college 147. So again, we would get right in that range. Non-resident 187 to 197. State average is 217. West Texas group 182, peer group 174, small college 194. So again, kind of hovering around in that area. So in a minute, when we get to handbook and catalog changes, there will be some recommendations in that. But before we got to that point, I wanted y'all to, as far as, you know, we've been trying to study this, look at it, see if you have questions, and we could answer some of those questions if you have them.
Anybody? I think we went back to the taxpayers last year with a little increase, you know, and whether somebody knows what will happen this year, and we obviously have funding challenges, and certainly, you said the last time this was changed was 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 6 years later, it's a very small increase, and I think that we probably need to ask the students to pick up a little bit of the shortfall and everything else to that for the other interest group to do that. Also, Howard College, I have been surprised in the past by the large number of scholarships that we give out. So I don't think, you know, considering that it's a few dollars and we give out so many scholarships on top of that and everything else, personally I would say absolutely we do not want to be, nor do we have to be, a cheap college. People should come to Howard because they want to come to college, Howard College because of the quality of our education, because of everything else, not because it's the cheapest college on the block. That goes back what Brian Stokes said about, you know, showing off our quality and so forth. We don't need to necessarily play in the cheap seats and attract the cheapest, the student that's only looking for the cheapest possible tuition. We want to be better than excellent.
Absolutely.
And so we're working. And particularly because it's only bringing us to, again, around the average.
Right. Right.
If we're being excessive.
Right. Right. Yes. Anybody else have any questions about that? I would also say that the SWID tuition, if y'all recall, it is set by the coordinating board because it has to be university level and or it has to, by state law, non-resident tuition for state for SWID is set by the coordinating board. Deaf and hard of hearing students in the state are tuition waived, but that's also going to be part of the conversation in a minute when we get into handbook and catalog changes. Okay, so Mr. Chairman, working from those studies, moving into the handbook and catalog changes, you want to go to that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Handbook catalog changes.
All right. So, looking at the catalog changes, then you're going to have first then, and we've got, this is the time of year, of course, April, is when we bring catalog changes to you. And there are a number, including the tuition. But let me kind of go through some of them, and I'm going to ask Amy to do some of it as well. But so what I just talked about was the in-district tuition going up for, by $5, out-of-district by 10, and same thing for non-resident by 10. SWID, we basically, the state took it down a dollar, but it's $458 per semester hour. To just give you reference of what non-resident tuition is, and that's, mind you, at the universities, they increase, there's more on top of that. That's $458 that the coordinating board sets for university tuition, and then on top of that, there are other tuitions that they add to it. Howard College's is $169. So there you go. That shows you a reference point right there. But for SWID, by state law, then we are required to have the same non-resident tuition for our SWID students. So that gives you right there, you see how much more our non-resident students at SWID are paying. But again, that is a requirement by state law. So then, dual credit. As I said, and I will tell y'all, I have struggled with exactly how to approach this, but to the point we were talking about it to about 11:20 this morning, but really studied this a lot, but I'm ready to make a recommendation that we go down the path that we move the base and keep the hourly tuition 48, 60, and 82, 48 for in-district, 60 for out-of-district, 82 for non-resident, when the course is taught by a Howard College instructor. If it's taught by a high school instructor, then, again, and those high school instructors, I want to make sure when we say high school instructor, they become an adjunct for us. They're credentialed, and they can be a college-level instructor. The tuition rate is zero. Fixed fees are waived. That's already what we do. Students are responsible for certain courses or program costs, such as insurance, licensure requirements, testing, certification equipment, etc. And also, if we have a faculty member that has to travel to a campus as a part of our MOUs, that also has to be covered. And so, basically, you can see then it keeps it pretty simple, straightforward, and so that's the path that we would go down on that.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Assuming this enrollment stays fairly stable.
Yes.
Approximately, what is the financial impact to Howard College? Is it that $383,000 that was on the other worksheet?
That, let me go back to that. For regular tuition, and that is also going to vary by the campus.
I'm looking at the overall.
Yeah, the overall.
Overall picture.
Yes.
College is an institution.
Yes.
You know, we're looking at potentially $1 million, $2 million in shortfall from the state.
Right.
What does this do to that?
Right. It helps with that. And pull that up. Yeah. And so, yes. And that then, it would vary by the campus, the Big Spring campus. Again, we are using 2021 enrollment figures and credit hours, you know. Yeah. So it's about 114,000 more for the Big Spring campus. La Mesa, 9,370. San Angelo, it'd be 251,960. SWID, 7,436. So a total of 383,481.
Yeah.
And
significant of what the state, what I'm looking at is, we haven't got to that yet, the state is talking about reducing,
right.
And we're looking at how we're going to make that up.
Exactly.
Prison, whatever, still got legislature, but this is obviously
that's right.
Help with it.
That's right. And that is one of the reasons when I said that I'd been struggling a little bit with on the dual credit one, because we could see some decrease in that, looking at numbers, possibly 50, 60,000, but it also, that's looking at current numbers. But then it's going to, that all depends on the mix, what starts happening in the way of what we're doing with our schools relative to physical education. And so that was one of the reasons we were talking so long and hard about that, because that one's a little more of a struggle for me. But because of looking at the overall picture and competitiveness, we want to make sure that we're staying competitive.
Sure, when you say competitive, are you talking about
the
dual credit area?
Yes.
You were talking about, in the past, you said Angelo State poaching, if you will, some of that. So you're trying to, stay competitive with is the Angelo State price.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Okay, there's more. There is definitely more on catalog changes. Amy, why don't you pick up on some of these others?
I'm going to read all of the changes. Major Aunt Peggy and her get really be upset. Okay, I'll take you through these. Dr. Sparks has talked about the tuition area. And then on the next pages, we do have a 3D printing machine now on Big Spring, which I'm anxious to go see that. There's a charge in there. The financial aid changes are all to comply with federal regulations. The success initiative, this is the first year that we will be doing the new TSIA2 test, and so we had to adjust all of those scores and levels of courses, and that takes you into the through page 3. A part of page 4, and then starting on the academic information in page 4, a lot of this is cleaning up, which is a lot of every year we do. We clean things up that are no longer even relevant or things we need to change. We just talked a little bit about electives in the first academic information. If you remember, last year y'all approved a new AAS EMS degree, and now that's going into the catalog. Y'all approved for us to move forward with it, and now that will be in the catalog. We do have, I'm excited about two new degrees. One is in computer software and media applications. We are wanting to do a certificate one, level one, level two, and the AAS. This is so to get your approval to put it in the catalog. It will still be pending coordinating board approval. At the next meeting, I will have Dr. Freeman sign a certification form that goes to the coordinating board to say that you approve the programs. And then the second program area is the Computer Information System Security degree. that we are proposing. And again, an 8, an Associate of Applied Science in addition to certificates level 1 and level 2. The following pages 11 all the way through, and I certainly can answer any questions. Most of these are just minor changes to courses. A lot of times the coordinating board actually has the workforce education course manual that archives courses every year. We have to go through there and delete old courses and add new ones. That's a lot of what this is about. Stop me and I'll answer any of the questions on those degrees. And more changes to the IT program. And then on page 19, if you remember, a prior meeting, you approved us to move to a Service of Technology Associate of Applied Science degree as opposed to just the Certificate 1, so we're eliminating that from the catalog. And then General Construction Technology Certificate 1, we are not utilizing that certificate as much as we are the other more specific certificates in that area, so we would like to remove that. And then she has her list of some minor course changes to prerequisites. And then we are proposing to add 3 courses to the core curriculum. We would like to add life and physical, agronomy, American literature to the language, philosophy, and culture area, and British Lit to that area as well. And I don't see that these will not be approved by the coordinating board, but these also have to go to the coordinating board before it can be final. Those today are all the catalog changes. And I promise you that over the summer we will not have more. Any questions of that?
Like a computer security, I think that, honestly, that is, again, goes back to the vision. I think that's something that we should be, once it's running and ready, we should be loudly promoting that we have that program, because that is a huge growth area nationwide. And again, I think we put us at a advantage.
Right.
You know, we talk about our excellence and
absolutely
not shining our light on the book.
I think it'll be popular and well received.
Absolutely.
And hopefully advertised.
Right. Okay. Mr. Chairman, we'll keep going. That takes you, okay. Then it would be, as a part of that, we'd also have the academic calendar. I can do that one. I can do it.
I've got it.
Basically, on the calendar, it's essentially what you approved. What you approved last spring, before COVID happened. Then we had to adjust everything and had different calendar, but basically it's the same thing. We have incorporated something that we think is going to be very good for our students. Some people call them 0 weeks, and we're calling it Dream Week. Cindy Smith and group are really working on all of that, and we're going to have, we're building in a couple of days in that particular week when we start in the fall, where students will they'll go through a lot of career exploration. They'll do a lot of finding out what goes on as far as what we offer on campus, where to find different places, a little bit of career search themselves.
Learn how to use Blackboard.
Yeah, Blackboard.
Cindy and group, they've done a lot to prepare students so they can start classes ready when they get there, as opposed to, 6 weeks in, how do I log into my class? Sometimes you get that. And so they're doing a great job of the LEADS program, and now we're just trying to push it even earlier so they will have intense sessions before classes ever begin, and then throughout that first week they will be meeting and all as many faculty and staff as we can we want on hand and helping, so I'm excited to see that roll out.
So that's basically the academic calendar. Then as far as what happens in the springtime, we have you do the annual catalog reaffirmation, basically reaffirm everything that you've already approved. So that would also be a part of this motion whenever you get there. Also, as part of this area, we have the student handbook, and we have changes regarding the prohibition of discrimination or harassment of students on the basis of race, color, and national origin, and prohibition of sexual discrimination or sexual violence or sexual harassment. We already have those policies, but basically what we've done, we've updated them.
We've updated some terms, you know, federal guidelines, you have to use the exact correct terms for everything. Christy McCaska, she's our district title non-director, and she works with all the campuses, and so she, and along with the other deans as well, have gone through to make sure that all of the language, definition, everything matches current federal guidelines. And it's never, it's a full-time job to keep up with these regulations. But that, both of those are basically those are the changes involved in both of those. I'm happy to answer any questions.
You don't know what we're talking about.
I still have to read it and be able to interpret what I
see. Yeah, the best we can. Yeah, yeah, thank you. So, all that. Need a motion.
Okay, all that.
Do we accept all the changes as written?
I have a motion. Do I have a second? I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Yeah, he did it.
Okay, motion passes. Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda, Steve and purchasing.
All right, and as Steve coming up, let me remind you what we talked about in the update area on COVID-19. We spent a lot of time looking at how we can use this CARE funding. And so, Steve, you want to take them through A and B, how that relates to that?
Okay, sure. Good afternoon, everybody. The first thing is the Microsoft Surface Laptop 3, and we obtained, Eric obtained three quotes for those. Each of those individual entities are members of an interlocal agreement, and the college is also a member of that, so we can purchase from any of these guys. The connections was the lowest at $195,300. There's 175 laptops involved with that, or Surface laptops, and a three-year complete business agreement. It is through the NCTA, contract number 01-44 is the CARES fund, which is federal fund, and then Howard Technologies was the other one, or the second one, and CDWG was the third. Our recommendation is that you accept the connection one for $195,300.
Again, all CARES funding.
All CARES funding.
Who gets the list? Just the staff?
It will be. No. It will be students. As far as being able to check out in the event that we have scenarios where we need to go into a remote scenario, we can do that. Instruction, our faculty. These are not for staff members. This is purely instructional laptops. And this is for across the district, all the campuses.
So how will they be? Will it be in the library?
It will. They'll be in labs. They will be checked out. And Eric, you're on the line. Amy, you want to also jump in on some of that?
Yeah. We talked about checking them out. And I have not been involved in all the discussions about these laptops. I noticed they will have to be checked out. And there's a list of requests
And I don't know how many, Eric might know how many, because we weren't able to fill last go around, and I know we're going to start with those, if I'm understanding correctly, with faculty and students.
Yeah. We looked at, there was a greater request than we ended up going out for. And Brenda, can you add anything else to it? Okay. But basically that, you know, it would take care of students. Eric?
Well, I couldn't hear the question very well.
Exactly as far as checking them out, what would be the process?
For these computers we're buying?
Yes, the laptops.
A lot of them are going to faculty. A lot of them are, a good portion are replenishing laptops in areas, classrooms, and labs. We had some old laptop carts that were used to check out laptops to students. So probably a very high percentage of these are going either back to classrooms or to faculty members that may not have one right now. And then I think the idea that was talked about was if faculty and staff have existing laptops that were checked out, we would try to get those back, clean them up, and repurpose the existing equipment to hand out to students. So a large portion of these are really just to replenish and to give faculty and staff laptops that they may or may not have. But.
And then also, Eric, and this is something that we've not brought to you yet, but we've also been, because we are doing, as far as have been checking out more during this time frame, going down the path of getting some insurance as far as that could go with laptops. We're not bringing that forward today, but that is something that we're also looking at, too, as we do more of that as far as checkout.
Any more questions?
Anything else? Okay.
So, I've got one more question. So, when
sure.
You check out, what's the duration of the checkout? For the semester or for...
I would
It
would probably be for a semester unless they started coming, they got back and they were coming into class and they weren't studying remotely anymore, that kind of thing. It would vary by the scenario. But I would say probably for the most part it would be by the semester.
Any more questions? Do you have a motion to approve these?
Do you want to? Oh. No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I have a motion to have a second.
Okay.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay. Motion passes. Thank you very much.
No,
Light Board.
Yeah.
CARES District
okay.
Fund.
So last year is another purchase with CARES Fund, and we're going to ask that if you would just pass on that this time. Going back to what Dr. Sparks said about the discussion with the auditors, we're just trying to make sure that we do it completely right. There was some things about the sole source, and when you get into sole source with federal funds, we found other sources for them. There were some things about size, several inches, and they were wanting a larger one.
Particularly our SWID campus.
Mm-hmm. So, if you would just pass on that, we'll bring it to you next time when we resolve it.
Let's do the master lease agreement then.
You want to do the motion on the pass it or just leave it?
We can just pass
right.
on
The third thing is the master lease agreement for printers, and that lease agreement is with Hewlett-Packard. Under that agreement, it's a DIR contract, which is also an interlocal. It's under a bulk purchase initiative, and what it is instead of the college buying printers, we would be leasing printers. They would come in and be doing the service on it. I believe they supply the ink on it. So it's a better deal, I think, going to save us some money. We bring contracts to you that are over $50,000, and at some point this will go over 50. We want you to know about it. But right now we're just starting it, and so these will not be replaced in bulk. It'll only be when printers break, and rather than us going out and buying it, we'll be acquiring it under this lease. And so we wanted to do that.
Any questions?
This includes the 3D printer?
I don't think so. I don't think so. It's more. Yeah, it's more of just the daily printer time.
Office labs.
Okay. Any more questions? And motion to approve?
So moved.
Have a motion to approve. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, thank you. That motion passes. All right, our next item on the agenda is Cabinet recommendation.
Yes, I would like to recommend that we renew the following individuals in administrative positions: Amy Burchett as Executive Vice President, Brenda Claxton, Chief Fiscal Officer, Controller, Steve Smith, Chief Business Officer, Internal Auditor, Fabian Serrano, Chief Operations and Safety Security Officer, Rhonda Koenig, Chief Human Resources Officer, Eric Hansen, Chief Technology Systems Data Security Officer, Pam Callen, Executive Dean, Sanangelo, and Dan Campbell, Executive Dean. Those are the cabinet-level positions, and I ask that you approve them. They do a wonderful job, and I recommend them to you highly.
Yes. Have a motion to approve those cabinet changes? Have a motion to have a second?
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Motion passes. Howard County Tax Appraisal.
And thank you. These folks are great, and I appreciate your support of them. Howard County, okay, as y'all know, whenever there is a vacancy on the appraisal district when it's not a part of the regular cycle, then what the tax appraisal district asks is that the entities provide them with nominations for consideration. And we've had Sandy Smith, who was just originally, she's been on a very short period of time, but she has actually gone to work for the city and so can no longer serve. And so we have now, they have a vacancy, and so they've asked us to get all of the boards in the appraisal district to make recommendations. Again, they will look at the recommendations, they'll decide and make final determination on who will serve in that role, but they are asking for nominations. In the fall, I believe it will be in the fall, we'll have the cycles will be back up, and then it'll be when people will vote, actually, all the entities will vote and have so many votes and all that kind of thing. But this is, at this point, this is a nominee. And I would just say that our tax appraisal district is really, they have a big job, and our board, our tax appraisal board has a big job. So this is becomes more and more of a challenge. I think anybody that's serving on the appraisal district board, it's more of a challenge than ever before. And so very important. They are volunteers, and we appreciate the fact that people will volunteer to be on those boards, on that board. Richard Petrie, as y'all know, is interim as our chief appraiser. And he has agreed to stay on as they search for the final individual. But at this point, they've not had, I think, any interest. So that puts a lot of responsibility on that board, as well as, thank goodness, we have Richard Petrie willing to be an interim. So do you have anybody that you would like to recommend?
How many people on the board?
Oh, six, I want to say, five or six, something.
How many? There are a number of entities.
City of Big Spring, Kahoma, Forsand, Harvard College, Big Spring, ISD.
City of Forsand, City of Kahoma.
Can I, this isn't really so much for now, but it seems that this comes up a lot. But
yeah.
And we're going to have a cycle in the fall. Can I just maybe throw out the idea that for the fall cycle, that Howard College thinks about definitely nominating someone for, not exactly in Howard College's interest, because it doesn't really work that way, but that Howard College take a role in finding one member.
Right.
I think it sounds like it's been a while since Howard College has sort of done more than sit back and let the process go. And we're a major entity here as well. We probably have a bigger budget than, say, the City of Kahoma or the City
of
Forsand.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Or whatever.
Well, we have one that's on the board.
We
yeah.
Now.
Yes, we do.
We need to make sure that we do the upcoming cycle.
Right. And the cycles, yeah, they rotate.
We have one now.
So we continue to do
that. Right. Yeah. So this is just, again, we've just had an unusual scenario over the last, I guess, the last year. We've had three, I think, and we had, maybe get my numbers wrong, but we had an individual that moved out of town. I can't remember what happened to the other individual.
It's been a lot of
change. Yeah, there's been a lot of change. And so, anyway, as I say, that's a tough responsibility.
So there's nothing really to approve.
Well, if you had a nomination, if there was a name that you would want to put out there, then what would happen is that we would just turn that name in, and then they'll look at the names given to them and make a final selection. So, if you want to give a name now.
So, they want to have a name? I don't believe anyone has a name right now. So, we can really just pass on this.
Yeah.
On this item.
Yes, you can. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you can.
So, we'll just pass on this item and go to factory contracts.
Okay. Again, in April is when we do official notice of employment status that's issued from the president's office. And that official offer is made when a completed contract is presented, which is not until August, and that is dependent upon the adoption of the college budget that may be delayed pending the passage of an appropriations bill by the state legislature or other circumstances. The offer of a contract of employment may be withdrawn by the board at any time before it's signed and delivered. So that's basically every April that's what we do, make recommendation, and then we send those notices out to our faculty so that they know. And I gave you the list of individuals that we recommended, and I recommend those individuals.
Any comments or questions? I entertain a motion to approve those people. Motion to have a second. I have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Motion passes. Thank you very much. Next item on the resolution is faculty retirement resolution.
All right. We do not have any faculty retiring at this time, but that we're aware of, but we do know this time of year sometimes people will make that decision, and so we ask for authority to prepare appropriate resolutions for signature in the event that happens so that we can have them for graduation ceremonies, and then of course you would be we would get your signatures on those. We don't have any that we anticipate right now.
Okay. Do I motion to approve that?
So moved.
Have a motion to have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye. Thank you very much. Motion passes. Professor Emeritus.
Okay. I do have a recommendation for Professor Emeritus by policy. We need to receive three letters of nomination from peers for a nomination to come forward for an individual, and we have that. And Diane Gehrke for our San Angelo site has been nominated. She fits the criteria. She retired this past November and was an associate professor in child and family development studies as well as the business area. She worked for Howard College San Angelo for 23 years. And so I would recommend Diane Gehrke as Professor Emeritus for our San Angelo campus for this year.
Yeah, sounds like she's very needed in that. We need a motion to approve. And a motion to have a second.
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Next item is construction renovation projects. Old Terry's on the floor.
Go, Terry.
O-L-E.
Yeah, if we bring a hailstone as a...
Not today. Well, I was going to joke with you, too. It's going to be a really long report. I won't say that. I'll try to make this brief. I know you've seen the report, I believe, Dr. Sparks, right?
Yes, sir. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, in a nutshell, I'll try to just bring you up to date. The details are in your board packet. We're making great progress, even in light of the inclement weather, extremely windy days, the extremely cold days, especially when there's snow and those kind of things, or rain, really hamper progress because, like in the case of Squid, where they're tearing the roof off, they've got to be really careful to not tear off more than they can put back before it rains. And so,
that's not an
even
issue,
some,
Terry.
Pardon?
The rain is not an issue.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
we've actually had some leaks out there, but anyway, small ones, and we're addressing those. But several roofs do have their coatings applied, and we are making progress, and those are listed in the report, the most recent version being the April 22nd. I think something worth mentioning on the Burke Administration Building is we were quite concerned that the metal roof deck underneath that roof, we were going to find rust. So far, so good. The actual area that we worried the most about is on the north side of that building. We haven't gotten to that part yet, but since we haven't found any to date, we're really optimistic that will not be a problem. And the reason that's a good thing is that if we did find damage to the deck, you know, that would be an unknown condition, and so that would be an added cost. So far, so good on that. Howard College, we're starting to get work on this campus, on the Howard College campus. Most of it is preparatory. There's a lot of work around the edges of several of our buildings. There's a picture in there, and there's been a couple along the way in weeks prior. This company is doing excellent work. I mean, we go up there, and it's just textbook perfect. And you can see in those pictures what I'm talking about. The Dorothy Garrett Coliseum, and I'll talk about the hail in just a minute, but as you know, I believe you know, because of the change order number 3 that you approved, the front lobby canopy or the front lobby roof is going to get redone. There's been a lot of materials that have been shipped in. I saw a lot of it this morning over behind the McKinney Building, and then as weather permits and as they are able to come this way, that work will be done on the front of the Garrett Coliseum. Other buildings, the fitness center, the administration complex, the dormitories, the sub, this building. Just preparatory work again. The Broughton Ag Complex, they are power washing that very large building, and that is a lot of power washing to get that building ready for the coating. We were up on top of that building this morning, and also the McKinney building. Those both have metal roofs, and we're looking at possible hail damage, which leads me, I guess, to my final comment on the Dorothy Garrett Coliseum. We were also on the top of that building. We saw some pretty significant hail hits from the March 13th hail storm, and so. Phil Ferquin's here today. Vernon Dunnigan's here today. We were together most of the morning, and then I'm going to be meeting up with them at, when I leave here. We were looking to, in preparation for the insurance adjuster coming tomorrow to look at the hail damage from that March 13th hailstorm. We saw some damage. That to the extent that that goes beyond what was already covered in the insurance settlement that we have in hand. But after tomorrow and after the adjuster does their work, then we'll know exactly where we stand with that. And so other than that, if you had any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them. Dr. Brandon, Dr. Ford, anything?
Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions? Mike, you're doing a great job, Terry. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's really interesting getting up on those buildings when the wind's blowing 20 miles
or 40.
It does make you be a little bit more careful than you would normally be walking around.
Well, at least you're small enough to don't make quite a sail.
I catch a lot of wind here.
Thank you very much. Okay, foundation field.
All right. Are you going to be able to put that up? Yeah. So, Terry, do you want to talk, give the board kind of an update on the foundation field and Big Spring Refinery Park updates with the...
And I believe, actually, I'm seeing it up on the monitors, and I think you have that on your in your board packets as well.
Yeah.
In the last 3 or 4 months, we have replaced both scoreboards at Foundation Field and at Jack Barber Field. The scoreboard at Jack Barber Field, being the oldest, it was really, really old. It had little light bulbs, and most scoreboards have been out of the light bulb business for, I don't know, many years. But and you can see in the pictures, they're really very attractive, much easier to see than what we had previously. In the case of the softball field, the old scoreboard was really a Little League scoreboard, which really just gave the innings, the total score, and I think who was at bat and that type of thing. The new scoreboard is more modern. It gives the runs by inning, and it looks much more collegiate. Julie is working hard to get us sponsors, and those were paid for by donated funds as well, and fundraising money. So. But it is a huge improvement to both those fields. And then, and there's a couple of pictures there that you can see on the softball field that show the softball field house that's under construction. That's again funded largely by donated money. The construction trades program has contributed a little bit to that, and not only labor, but also a little bit of their budget, and it's progressing nicely. I think Mr. Light, that teaches that class, would like to have a few more students in the program. Right now, it's him and two and sometimes three students. So would move along a little bit faster if he had more help, but it's still progressing very well. You know, as you can see, the foundation is complete, the framing is complete, and then the roof structure will be done hopefully in the next 3 or 4 weeks. We'll just have to see.
Great, thank you. Looking very good.
And then, board members, let me remind you, on May the 7th at noon at the softball field, we're going to have a ceremony thanking the Abbasovs and Jimmy Newsom for their support of the softball field project.
Okay. Well, Ms. President.
All right.
Let's let you take it to the end.
I'll take it to the end. Okay. As far as activities, you already know several of those. We've been talking about, and I won't go through every single one. We've got the foundation meeting for the Big Spring campus this Thursday for those that are a part of that. I've already mentioned the San Angelo Awards convocation. We've got all kinds of baseball, softball going on. Rodeo's finished. Last weekend was our last rodeo. We did not make it out with any of those young people being able to go to the next level, but we were very, very proud of them. Baseball and softball are both doing very well. And, in fact, our softball team has only lost one game. And I think as of yesterday, we were ranked fourth in the nation. And the baseball team, I think we're 17th in the nation, something like that. And they're doing really well, too. So those young people are having a lot of fun. And we will be going into the top six baseball will be in Lubbock May 7th through the 9th. And that's different. In the past, we would have had a regional tournament where everybody would come together and we'd battle it out. Well, now we're going to have the top six from our conference, and then from there we'll do a regional tournament, and that'll be May 14th through 18th, and that'll depend on who wins the tournaments coming from the north and the west. So that's different. We've already mentioned all of the pinnings, graduations. All of our activity in San Angelo will happen on Thursday the 13th. And we have a full day of different things that will be happening. On the 14th, will be the Big Spring Lanisa Swid time. We've already talked about all that this morning. Earlier. So that's lined out. We have all the pinning ceremonies that day. We've gone to that because we feel like that it's helpful for the families that come in from out of town if they're able to do the pinnings and do the graduation ceremonies, and it works well. It keeps us real busy, but we think it works well. So we start the summer work hours on the 17th after graduation. And then, as I mentioned in your memo, I want to get you to consider your regular board meeting in May would be May 24th, but based on what is happening with the session, I'm going to ask if you would consider a possible board meeting on June the 7th, and frankly, kind of give me the opportunity to work with both of those dates in case we need one or both for whatever reason, if those would work for you. Obviously, we'll try to have just one board meeting, but in the event that we needed two, it would be great to be able to have that. Recognitions, I've already mentioned some. Students are doing really well, but I also just wanted to just bring up the fact that Mark Adams, who was our previous head coach for the basketball program and when we went to the national tournament, is now the head basketball coach at Texas Tech. And Howard College has received a lot of recognition through all of that. It's come up, been quite active out there in the media about his time at Howard College. And I would remind everybody that he actually started as an assistant basketball coach and activities director, and then went away, started head jobs, and then came back as head basketball coach. So we have a long history and relationship with Mark, and we're trying to figure out, we're going to do something to recognize Mark. We've got some ideas going that I will work on before I share them, but anyway, we're very, very proud of Mark. Moving to required cybersecurity awareness training. This is a different training that you're required to do. We're all required to do it, all college employees, but board members do as well. This is a more substantive one than the first one you did, and you will be receiving an email with a link to complete the training, and then it will automatically notify HR. So if you have any questions, need assistance, you need to let us know. We're trying to get this done within, you know, next 6 weeks maybe. If you could get it done, then we can check that off our list.
Has that been sent, or are they going to send it?
Has it been sent yet? Has that, the email link?
Well, Rhonda's on the phone.
Rhonda, has that been sent yet?
No, we were waiting for word from you.
Okay.
Very good, because I delete a lot of stuff.
Yeah, all right.
And we got the list of emails from Emma, so they'll go to the email she provided.
All right, thank you, Rhonda. Yeah, your email. You'll get them at your email.
My email gets wacky from college, so I need to make sure I get what I'm supposed to.
Okay. We'll give you a heads up when we're sending it. How about that?
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. All right, legislative and general updates. Okay, so we're getting into the part of the session now where both the Senate and the House have approved their version of the budget. And the House just did that last Thursday, their version. And so now we're moving into, they'll start the conference committee work. And as always, the two bills don't match, and so they will eventually get to the process of, okay, we're going to have a conference committee, and they'll start naming who's going to be on the conference committees representing both chambers. So that is starting, and we will be seeing some of that. Obviously, I mean, it's hard to believe we're in the last week of April, but we'll move very quickly into the end of the session. Sine die is on the last day of May, Memorial Day, and that's when the regular session ends. Now, a special session can be called, but the regular session ends that date. The House, there was a unanimous vote that any of the federal funding should be considered in a special session. The House voted on that, and everybody agreed. Just as we're struggling, you've heard us talk about all day how we don't, you know, we're trying to be careful, we're going to use that federal money correctly, there's all these guidelines. Well, they're doing the same thing. And so the discussion is slow, and they are trying to figure out what they need to do. Now, House and Senate both have to agree on that, and frankly, the governor is who calls the special sessions, so we will see what ultimately happens. But what that tells us is that they're having a hard time figuring out what to do with the federal funds, and the federal funds can play a very important part in addressing some of the holes in the budget that they have. The other thing that's going to happen is we're going to hear from the state comptroller pretty quick. He's going to give an updated biennial revenue estimate. And that basically, as they move into the end of the session, that is letting them know, okay, this is the money you have. This is what you can work, you know, you've got to work with, because they have to have a balanced budget. And so that will be happening. So what does that mean for us? Well, as of this day, we are in a scenario where in both the House and the Senate, we have a reduction of right at $2.3 million. That is for both years, the biennium, so that's for the biennium, and that is a direct reflection of what has happened with our Contact Our Generation, as we've talked about multiple times. A lot of that is driven by what we were unable to do at the federal prison. We don't generate contact hours at the GO prisons. Those are contracts, and we do not submit them for contact hours. But the federal prison instruction is submitted for contact hours, and so that is driving a lot of that reduction. We're not alone. 30 of the 50 community colleges, actually, depending on which bill, on the Senate side, 32 are losing. On the House side, 31. So, you know, they're both pretty close as far as the fact that we have that many community colleges without full formula funding as compared to the last session. The community colleges are making a big push to get support for Hold Harmless. And Hold Harmless, we're asking for 100%. 100% would get everybody back to the same amount of money as they had in the last biennium. We also know, and I've mentioned before, that that could be all kinds of different numbers. 95, 96, 92, 90. You know, through the years, they've used all different kinds of numbers. And so will we get 100% Hold Harmless? Don't know that until we get till the end of the session. Right now, we don't have it. In the Senate bill, they don't have it anywhere. It's not anywhere. As I mentioned last time, the good news is our SWID 5% that we had to put as a reduction in our legislative appropriation request, they did restore that. Senator Seliger, thank you very much, and his team got that restored. So that, and I will tell you, that was the only thing in the community college bill that changed on the Senate side. So that was a big feat. On the House side, for SWID. SWID is in Article 11, which is in is often called the wish list. So we do have, SWID is over, it's not in the regular bill, but it's in Article 11. In Article 11, then, they have money for the restoration of the 5%, plus they have, remember, we asked, the second exceptional item was to give us additional funding for faculty salaries, and so they have that in Article 11. The House did put in Article 11 Hold Harmless money. Going into the vote last week, we didn't know if they might change up success points, and we were advocating for them to use the metrics that the community colleges had recommended. They didn't do that. So they kept the metrics, basically their metrics, what the House has, differs from what the Senate has in the way of metrics for student success. The Senate is putting more emphasis on transfer and less emphasis on our degrees, which we're concerned about that. We feel like we don't want our certificates and degrees to lose value. And so we have started that conversation and trying to get some of that addressed in the on the floor for the House when they were looking at the House bill, but that didn't happen. So all that will go to conference committee. So they'll be looking at Hold Harmless in an Article 11. For SWID, the good news is that SWID is right there on the table. So that helps us right there during the regular conversation. We'll have SWID because it's in the Senate bill. That bodes well for us because we have it right there. The hold harmless being in Article 11 and it only on the House side, there's more of a mountaintop. And so that is why that conversation about the vote and how that possibly federal funds could be used for hold harmless and or that's what we're going to at least be pushing for. And so there's a lot of unknown. That's one of the reasons, again, that I mentioned as far as having the board meeting on the 24th or the June 7th, because of the fact that Sinai goes to May 31st, that gives us the opportunity to see if what they end up with and if they go into special, they're going to do a special session. So there's just a lot up in the air relative to funding. So in the meantime, what we've been doing and we've shared, we've been working with the SCI, and we have since last summer raising our hands, and we anticipate that this could be a problem, and sure enough, it was. We've had some recent meetings with them and said it's there, it's happened, what we were concerned about. This is the way we're going into the final days of the session, and so we're continuing those conversations. We also are concerned about what is happening with GO in our community. You all know that the new administration, there were several executive orders that were released, and one of those was that the federal government no longer contracts with the private industry for prison placement. And so that, of course, is a direct impact on the prisons, the GO prisons in Big Spring, Howard County, because they are federally contracted prisons. And so we have employees at that institution as well. And again, that's not funded on contact hours. That is a straight contract, and they pay us for those positions and benefits. And so we've been staying in contact with those individuals as well. So we're working through all of those kinds of things. In May, as a part of the visioning work, excuse me, May 6th, we'll be monitoring what matters, and we will definitely be watching that one because that will help us determine what metrics we want to align with our vision and mission and strategic planning work. And do y'all have any questions on any of the budgeting, but the appropriation stuff?
I just have one question. How many other colleges are in the situation we are where the prisons made a big impact on their contact hours?
We have, excuse me, I want to say there's probably about five of us. In fact, I didn't bring that note with me. The other day, we were, first of all, last summer, I started raising my hand in the TAC meeting saying we're going to have a problem with our prisons, and this is going to be an issue. And so during one of the hearings, because as you all know, we're not able to go, they're limiting the numbers, and so we have a small number that are there. But TAC, Texas Association of Community Colleges, used us as an example. Mm-hmm. But the senator that was asking the question was really, he represented another prison. And so it's a long answer to your question, but probably around five, based on the conversations that I remember that have this kind of impact. And this last week, we were pushing on that
There ought to be some sort of special consideration for that, because that was nothing we could do.
Absolutely.
About, or you could do anything about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And we've been trying. We tried to get back in as soon as we could. And then when we got back in, of course, they have altered operations, and so we can't generate as many contact hours. And so, yeah.
That's significant.
Yeah, it's huge.
So
yeah.
We have the biggest percentage loss of any community college.
Yep.
So,
yep.
But let's look at the numbers. That's what matters. I mean, the legislature ultimately is going to do what the legislature
That's
is
right.
going to do.
That's right.
Okay, so we're potentially short about $2.3 million.
Yeah.
Depending on which bill or what they do.
Right.
Now, we've just figured out, and that's for the biennial.
Right.
We've just done a tuition increase, which should bring in about $700,000 and $800,000 out of that. $383,000 a year.
Yes, over 2 years.
For 2 years. So
correct.
$783,000 for 2 years or $383,000 a year?
It would be per year.
So that's about between $700,000 and $800,000
right.
that we've clawed back.
But remember, I'm sorry to interrupt, remember that the prison loss will only be on the Big Spring campus. It will not impact the... Okay,
right.
We keep that.
We're still...
We're clawing back.
We're
right.
paying with all of the numbers.
Absolutely.
Because also whatever you get from the prison... will only affect the Big Spring campus
correct.
And not the other. So, I mean, you have compensating
right.
pluses and minuses.
Correct.
Okay? So we do have about a third of it sort of kind of vaguely covered.
Depends, yeah. Yeah.
Vaguely.
Right.
You know, we all know with the county, you know, to some extent we can offset some things around the district. So basically, it looks like the prison, the SCI prison, would need to come up with about $700,000 or $800,000 a year.
Yeah.
Is that like a number that they're talking about, or
we have been asking for those kinds of numbers? Yes.
And they're not chosen yet.
No, no. That was a conversation that started last summer. And in fact, in the last meeting, I actually indicated that for some of the overhead cost, that we had, there could be some need for that as well. And so,
they're kind of in that, and then of course we had the little budget increase last year, which is carrying forward. So it might be, so that's, again, on the Big Spring campus, is only how we pay that.
Right.
So it looks as if somehow when we wiggle with it, squish it around and whatever, that we aren't going to be devastated.
We're trying. Yeah, we're trying.
It's going to come out in one big piece, but it's going to be put back in smaller chunks.
Yeah, hopefully.
Or multiple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're striving for, you know, is to try to put it all together. But I'm sure the federal prison, they'll probably wait to see if we're going to get state funding, you know. So we're trying to work every angle that we can.
Yeah, no, I mean, you obviously are unbelievably on top of it, but unfortunately. Me, I guess, from my background, I'm sort of a numbers guy.
Sure. Sure.
And you notice a lot of my comments with things have to do with budget. And
right.
Kind of. So I'm looking at how do we make back $2.3 million.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's what we're working on. And the other thing, too, we on lost revenue, when I mentioned that earlier that Brenda and Margaret are working on the formulas to try to determine any kind of lost revenue that we could contribute to what happened with the pandemic. We're trying to figure that out. And we also asked the question of the federal government. There's a place you can send questions. Can you use federal funding for lost state appropriations? And the answer was yes. So we're trying to work that too, but the scenarios that we've got is that those the way those the grants are funded as far as when they end, and that's part of the issue that Brenda and I have been talking about. It's like we, you know, as far as the first year, it may be in that window as far as when we have to have those funds expended, and will it take care of the second year of the biennium, you know, and we're just having to look at all of those things.
Yeah, no, it's obviously extremely messy.
Yeah, it is.
But, you know, it does look like when you push everything against the wall and see what sticks,
right.
It looks like we have a number of avenues.
We're working them.
Pull back.
Yeah. Yep.
At least most of it.
We
$2.3 million.
We're hoping.
You know, we're you know, $383,000 in tuition, and
right.
A couple of hundred thousand in property taxes last year. Because I don't think anybody really wants to do another round of voters. You know, we can help that. So, you know, maybe
yep.
We can
pull it all together.
Pull it all together
yep.
And come out with pretty well.
Yeah, that's the method to our madness, you know, and it's a moving.
Oh yeah.
It's you know it's real hard right now because you can't.
Well, you don't even know what the state's going to do.
Yeah, and until they say this or that or whatever, I mean it's like you have to. We've got to wait to see what the state does. If they decide that they're going to go to a special session to talk about federal funding, and that is what they're going to use for hold harmless, and we're waiting for that decision.
And then you've got to wait for the physical.
We've got to wait for the,
after
yeah.
That, clearly a moving
yep.
Target all the way.
Yep.
Through.
Yep.
But it looks somewhat open.
Yeah.
If you look at this raw number, and, you know, we're the worst one on the list.
We are.
And you know, you go, oh, my God, what are we going to do with $2.3 million less than a biennium?
Right.
But it looks like, particularly since we approved the tuition increase, and that some of that is going to
yeah.
Mitigate.
Yep. We're trying. We are trying.
You're doing a fantastic job.
Oh, I mean, thank you.
Both of you and everybody. I mean, it you know, obviously... It is a moving target.
Yeah, thank you. It is a moving target. And what is difficult, and it's really hard, is because you know, you have people that their jobs, you know, they realize all of that is a concern.
The GEO part of it honestly concerns me less because we have a lot of prisons here and a lot of people involved. Somebody is going to have to continue to deal with that. Now, it is possible that the federal government will move them all out of here when they terminate their contract with GEO
mm-hmm.
and will send them all to Oklahoma or something, and that's a problem. But it seems to me fairly likely that they will somehow take over the GEO prison. I know President Obama had talked about for-profit prison, and he's trying to do that for that election. So, you know, obviously, since they're not going to turn all of these people across the country, just turn them loose.
Right.
The federal, if they're not going to contract with these prisons, they're going to have to run.
Right.
And since we already have infrastructure, and honestly, if they start to run those prisons, it's probably more likely that that will be a different system, and then maybe able to generate contact back. That you couldn't do with GEO.
Possibly.
So that's again, a moving target.
Yep. Yep. Well,
but
a lot of change.
I mean, I'm hoping that the state spring as a whole won't really move out on that because someone's going to house all these people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's 600 jobs for Howard County.
Well,
you know.
And they may not be all the exact same jobs.
Right.
But obviously, you know, there are going to be these prisoners are going to still be in prison.
Somewhere.
And most likely, I mean, the easy things to the federal government, and they do try to do kind of the easy things, would be to leave them here.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also, and as I mentioned, did find out that we're, to the individuals I was talking to, we're the only community that has both a federal and private together in the same community, so that could work well for us.
Yeah, we don't have a federal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Regardless of what, and again, everybody has differing opinions about what prisons do for a community, but nevertheless, we've got the scenario where we have people in jobs, so, yes.
Okay.
All right.
Two?
Yes, sir.
We decided to move that other meeting, or we're giving you the authority to move that other meeting, right?
Well, I'm asking, will y'all give me the flexibility?
Call the meeting when you need to call the
meeting. Okay, yeah. And put that on your calendars, the 24th and the 7th, and then...
Got mine on there.
Okay, and then it may be one of those things that we may need both, we may... need just one. If we can do it all in one, we will.
Yes. Thanks for the call.
And the email for the training will go out tomorrow.
Okay. The emails for the training will go out tomorrow.
Does the Cliff Notes go out with that?
You bet.
Tested that.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
Thank you all so much. I know
by the authority vested in me by the governor, I could declare this meeting adjourned.
I appreciate y'all's time. That was a long one.
He was like all the way back to the beginning.
See, it looks. Oh, is it okay?
Because.
I have been unsuccessful in finding a calendar. What's going on?
So sometimes when you've got too many tabs,
a computer and not a calendar.
You don't have a calendar in there?
No.
Download it again.
Like mine.
Again.
There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good.
Anyway.
Huh?
Pretty good.
I know it. You can't find it. I can't find the silly thing.
Okay. I need to...
Nuts.
You know what we need to do? Because really, once you start messing with it, it's not that bad.
I messed with things for 3 hours.
Well...
And I cannot find a blasted thing in it.
Well, that's what I was saying. Y'all just need to... Nothing. We may need to just help spark through it.
Okay.
And then it'd be better.
I don't know. One of the I don't know about that.
I ain't not me. The old way was the easy way.
Well, that's a straw that has a built-in little brush to clean the inside of it. And if you'll look on it, it says "Making Dreams Real." Pull that out. And that's a straw. And then those little decals, you can use those on your computer.
I mean, it doesn't take that long.
And you can take them off, and you can put them on your space bar. And
no questions throughout.
If that's what you want to use it for.
You just clean it out when it gets all dirty.
When it gets all dirty.
Yeah, but you've had
that's pretty cool. Done. Yeah.
They just have to prove.
Yeah, absolutely.
They said all their emails.
All right, I guess, Eric, we're hanging up.
At the end, or the little stuff.
I don't know if I like this May 7th.
And so, if you...
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.